So as Dorothy says in The Wizard of Oz, there is no place like home. And that is true on many, or not most, if not all, Yomim Tovim. There's something special about celebrating them in the comfort of one's home. But particularly when it comes to the Yom Tov of Chanukah, it seems best for a person to celebrate Chanukah at home, because as we'll see and soon discover, the mitzvah of Halakas HaMenorah is inextricably linked with one's home. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Shabbos and Daf Chaf Aleph from Beis that the person is supposed to light Halakas HaMenorah al Pesach Beisoy mi Bachutz, outside, right outside of his doorway, Samuch L'Rishus HaRabim, adjacent to the public thoroughfare, in order to be publicized in Ace. The Gemara says, what if he doesn't have a doorway that opens up into the Rishus HaRabim, that's adjacent to the public thoroughfare? If he's Darba Aliyah, he lives on a second floor, and the only way he gets there is by walking through the bottom tenant's home. So he doesn't have a designated doorway for himself that's adjacent to the Rishus HaRabim, so then he lights in the window. He's supposed to light in his window. Samach Rishus HaRabim, adjacent to the Rishus HaRabim. But again, he has to light in his home, adjacent to the Rishus HaRabim. Taisa says, what if a person adds to this Gemara, what if a person doesn't live in a home that opens up adjacent to the Rishus HaRabim? Rather, he lives in a housing development, and his house opens up into a courtyard, a chatzer, and that courtyard then opens up into the Rishus HaRabim. So Tosfos writes that a person is not supposed to light Halakas HaMenorah outside of his home, even though it's adjacent to the home, because it's not adjacent to the Rishus HaRabim. Rather, he should light Halakas HaMenorah outside at the Pesach of the Chatzir, where the Chatzir opens up into the Rishus HaRabim. And the Chatzir is considered to be an extension of his home, an appendage of his home, because people do semi-private activities in the Chatzir. So you do private activities in your home, but even in the courtyard, at that time, people did semi-private activities. They would hang out their laundry or sunbathe, walk around in their pajamas. That's what they would do in the chatzer. So Taisa says, therefore, it's considered to be an extension of your home. So for that reason, that the fact that you're supposed to light al Pesach the chatzer, so the Briskerov claimed that the proper way that a person should conduct himself if he lives in an apartment building is not to light Halakas HaMenorah outside of his door, of his apartment, because the door is not adjacent to the Rishus HaRabim. Rather, he should write outside at the bottom of the apartment buildings, at the bottom of the apartment building, outside of the lobby, which opens up into the public thoroughfare, into the Rishus HaRabim. The Chazon Ish disagreed, and that's the practice in Yerushalayim, like the Brisker wrote. However, the Chazon Ish disagreed that in the times of the Gemara, based on a Ramon Hilchos Erevin, that at the time of the Gemara, people used the Chatzir for semi-private activities. However, the Rama already suggests that in our times, people are no longer using a chatzer, a lobby, a courtyard, for semi-private activities. The lobby in most apartment buildings now is not meant for you to sunbathe and hang out your laundry and walk around in your pajamas. People would probably get quite upset if you did that in the lobby. It's not meant for your semi-private activities. It's more of a public space. So therefore, the Chazon Ish argues you can't light at the Pesach of the Chatzir anymore. That's not your home. You have to light al Pesach Beis Ami Bechutz. On the time of the Gemara, the Chatzir was an extension of your home. Nowadays, it's no longer an extension of your home, so you can't light al Pesach the Chatzir. Rather, you should light at the outside of your door of your own apartment. But you can't light outside of the door of your own apartment, not only because they might get upset if you put a menorah in the hallway, but also because it's not adjacent to the Rishus HaRabim. You have to satisfy both requirements. So Tosfos says, the Chazon Ish argues that in that situation, you should be like a person who's Darba Aliyah, a person who lives on a second floor that doesn't have a doorway that's adjacent to the Rishus HaRabim, and you should light in a window that opens up, that overlooks the Rishus HaRabim. So he lights in his home in a way that also fulfills the requirement of being Mefaris in the Nes. But you see that Halakas HaMenorah is inextricably linked with the home. It has to be Mefaris in the Nes, but you have to do so either al Pesach Beis Ami Bechutz or in the window. In our times, of course, as we know, our practice is not to light outside. We light inside, B'Shas HaSakana, Manich HaShulchan HaVadai, in a time of religious persecution, or we feel uncomfortable lighting the menorah outside, so we light inside. But at the same time, a person has to continue to light Halakas HaMenorah, satisfying both requirements to the best of his ability, that it should be adjacent to his, in conjunction with the home, and adjacent to the Rishus HaRabim. But Halakas HaMenorah has to be performed in conjunction with the place of a person's home. What if a person lives in one place and he sleeps someplace else? So the Gemara has a machlokes in Masechta Seirfin and Daf Ayin Beis which is considered to be your primary residence, the place where you eat or the place where you sleep. Makom pita garim, the place where you eat, or makom lina garim, the place where you sleep. And the Gemara concludes, we paskin makom pita garim. We paskin that the place where you eat is considered to be your primary residence. Nonetheless, the Gemara is quick to point out, let's say a person, to modify that that statement, that if a person, let's say, prefers the makom lina over the makom pita, it's preferable, or there's a certain benefits to being in the makom lina over the makom pita, so then the Gemara says, no, it's only if all things are equal, makom pita garim. But if the makom lina is preferable, So then, that's considered to be your primary residence. The Gemara says if they would, let's say, bring room service to your makom lina, you would never go to the makom pita. Why would you ever leave if they bring room service to your room? So then obviously that's your preferable place to be, and that's considered to be your primary residence. Therefore, the Mishnah Berurah writes, holding Hilchos Shabbos by Neiros Shabbos and as well as by Neiros Chanukah, that if a person has a place where he eats that's open to a large group of people, and he has a place where he sleeps that's private, that's personal to him. So that's the place that's considered to be his primary residence. The fact that it's private automatically makes it preferable to the place that's considered to be more public. So therefore, let's say a person is away for Shabbos, and he's eating in one place together with a large group of people, and he's sleeping in another place. He's away for Chanukah. So where should he light Neiros Chanukah? In the place where everybody's eating, or in the place that are his private quarters? So the Mishnah Berurah says in that situation, a person should light Hadlakas HaMenorah in his private quarters, because that's your primary residence, because it's more private. So let's say also a person goes away for Shabbos, or Friday night, let's say he's home. He's invited out for a Friday night meal, Shabbos Chanukah. So where should he light Hadlakas HaMenorah? So if you look in the Gemara says, Makom Pita Garim, you would think where I'm eating out Friday night, I could light Hadlakas HaMenorah there. I'll go before Shabbos, light Hadlakas HaMenorah at my host's house. The problem is, the Gemara says, if your place where you sleep is preferable, or as the Mishnah Berurah said, more private, so that's considered to be your primary residence. So if you were leaving your own home, where you live all the time, and you sleep there, and that's your private residence, you're going to eat out by somebody Friday night, you really probably should not light Hadlakas HaMenorah there. You should light Hadlakas HaMenorah in your house, which is considered to be your primary residence. So the problem people have is, I get asked every single year, is people want to go out Friday night. Shabbos Chanukah is a long Friday night. People want to go out to socialize. The problem is, no one wants to leave five menorahs in their house burning with nobody watching them. So they say, well, it's a fire hazard. So they say, come to me, we're going out Friday night, can we light there? I say, no, you can't light there. That's not your primary residence. Your primary residence is the place where you, your private home, which you live in the whole year. That's your bias. That's where you have to light a Lux menorah. So, but they don't want to leave the menorah there. It's a fire hazard. So I said, so don't go out every year. Okay. So they say, well, we can't socialize. I say, you can socialize every Friday night the entire year. Shabbos Chanukah, you have to stay home. That month. You go away the whole Shabbos, you get to your point. Then, of course, you light at the host house. Yeah, then you light at the host house. Because you have no other residence. But it's not as simple as that. We'll get to 1 second. So, Maisha also writes in the Igros Maisha, let's say a person is going away to a hotel for a whole Shabbos. And they're going to eat in a dining room together with everybody. But they're going to have, everybody has their own private room where they're sleeping. So, Maisha says, your primary residence is the place where you're sleeping, your individual room. And really, you should light Halakas Neiros Shabbos, you should light Halakas HaMenorah in the place where you're sleeping. The problem is the hotel won't let you do that because the fire has it. And rightly so, unless you're sleeping in a suite which has a kitchen. So, but otherwise, they'll be upset about it. So I would say, so don't go. But okay, fine. So you're already there. So where are you going to light now? So you're going to light, or for Shabbos, every time you go away for Shabbos, you really have to light Halakas Neiros Shabbos in your room. That's your primary residence for a lot of, it relates to a lot of Halakas. So where else can you light? Well, you do have some living quarters in the dining room. That's makom pita. It's not your preferable primary residence. Your primary residence is the place where you're sleeping, but you can't light there. It's off limits, so you light in the dining room. Okay, so Moshe says, better to light in your room. If not, you can light in the dining room. What if they set up, as they usually do at these kind of weekends, in the lobby, a table that's set aside for lighting? So Moshe says, that's a bracha levatela, both for Halakas Neiros Shabbos and Halakas HaMenorah. You have no living quarters there. That's not considered to be your residence at all. So to light in a lobby seems to be entirely problematic. But the Mishnah Berurah adds, not only is your primary residence the one that's more private, what if you, one is more permanent and one is temporary? Let's say I'm going away a whole Shabbos to sleep by my in-laws, my parents, whatever, somebody else. And it's a few blocks away from my house. But Shabbos Chanukah, we want to spend the whole family together. So we're going to sleep over. So, but I have a primary residence where I live with my wife and my kids a few blocks away. So then the Mishnah Berurah says, that's your primary residence is your real house. You're staying by the in-laws. So if you be far away from your primary residence, you can't get there, you know, that night. It's okay, you're a guest at somebody else's house, you can light there. However, if your primary residence is within walking distance, is within a driving distance, it's not too far away, so then the Mishnah Berurah says you should really light in your primary residence. You should light at the place where you sleep and live permanently. So if you're going to, let's say a person going to go sleep over at his parents' house because they're having a Hanukkah party, it would be best, if he's married, then he has his own house. It would be best if he lit in his own house before he left and then go and sleep in the parents' house. If he's already there and his house is not in walking distance or it's a Shabbos, it's too hard to get to, then he could light where he's sleeping. But otherwise, he should really light in his primary residence. What if a person, though, is going away for Shabbos and he's going to stay, you know, light there? It's his house, his primary residence is not anywhere nearby. So he's going to light by the host's house. And then, Motzei Shabbos, everyone's going to stick around for a Hanukkah party. But I'm later on that night, I'm going to go home to my primary residence. So in the Sefer Chayves Hador is written by Dayan Bloy, the author of the Sefer Pischei Choshen. So he's the first real Sefer that made a great impact. It was Chayves Hador and Hilchos Mezuzah and Halakas Neir Shabbos. And Halakas Neir too. So he says there that a person should wait till he gets home to his primary residence on Matzah Shabbos to light Halakas Neir. True, Friday night, you lit at the host house. That's when you were sleeping there and your primary residence was too far away. Now you're going to go home to your primary residence. You should really light when you get home. However, Sternbach and Shlomo Zalman both disagree. And they say, no, you are here for Shabbos. This is your residence for Shabbos. You get, just like some hotels, they allow you to stay over Motzei Shabbos too, you know, if you're there for the whole weekend. So you get Motzei Shabbos too by the host if you want to light Halakas Neir there together with the family. Everyone wants to light together or something. So you could be able to light there since that was your residence for Shabbos. You could hop around as well on Motzei Shabbos too, even though you're going to go home later. Yeah.
We said that one's staying by a guest for Shabbos, they should really light in the bedroom that they're staying
in. Yeah, the problem is you can light in the bedroom. It's a fire hazard. So you light in the dining room with everybody else.
With lighting the chachilo by the window like everyone else?
First of all, and let's say in your house, all the rooms are equal to you because they're all equally private. They all belong, let's say, in my house. They all belong to me. Let's say you're a guest and they're giving you a private room. And everyone else, and there's 10 rooms in the house, and there's Shabbaton, and there's 10 couples staying there, or 10 boys staying there. Everybody has their own room. So really, you should light Halakas Neir Shabbos in your room, but you're not going to light candles in the room. So at least you light, but you're staying in the whole house. So the whole thing is considered to be your residence. Your primary residence would be the place where you're sleeping.
But the family that lives there, even the window...
But I would, let's say if I were staying over somewhere, I would preferably, when we go away, I light an electric light, which we'll get to in a second, in the room where we're staying. As that, my wife goes downstairs, lights her own thing. I don't get involved in her business. Smart little piece of advice, if I could give you that. Let her light wherever she wants to light. I try and light a candle in the, you know, at least an electric light for Neir Shabbos. Neir Chanukah, you can't do this, but because that's considered to be your primary residence, your private residence, because that's unique to you. But Moshe, therefore, writes. You can light a home in Oira in a bedroom. I wouldn't recommend that with drapes and.
You have an electric one. You can make an electric
menorah. We'll get to an electric menorah in a second. Yeah.
But also, let's assume that your private bedroom is going to be facing just around most.
Right. So sometimes private bedroom is not. So you have the inner core. You know. Exactly. Yeah.
Is it better to light in your private bedroom or better to light in the window, which is facing which is around? Choose.
No, the Rishus HaRabim is presuming he says something which is an additional fulfillment for publicizing the Nes, but the Gemara says B'shas HaSakana Menichal Shulchan HaVedaya. One of the Rosh Yeshivas here, I don't want to say who lives in New York City, doesn't have a window that opens up to Rishus HaRabim. I was at his house on Hanukkah. He lights the menorah in the middle of his dining room, not near any window. He doesn't have it. So you don't have it, you don't have it, even on your dining room table. Anyway, so Ramesh says, so where should a person light in yeshiva? Where are you supposed to light in yeshiva? So everybody has a dormitory room. That's their primary residence. That's private to them. So really, Ramesh writes, you should light in the dormitory room. The problem is, in every yeshiva, that I'm aware of, they don't let you light in the dormitory room because of a fire hazard. And there have been fires in yeshivas on Hanukkah because of Halakha Seminar. So in most yeshivas, therefore, they light in the cafeteria. That's Makom Pita. It would be preferable if you could light in your room. But that's also, you do living activities in the cafeteria. Just everybody does it together. Better if you light in your own room. But okay, at least your secondary residence is in the cafeteria. So most yeshivas, they light in the cafeteria. The problem in our yeshiva that's unique, Rav Shechter has argued for many years, is that our cafeteria, more so in the past, I don't know if I noticed it more recently, but I haven't been in the cafeteria in a long time, is that it's more of a restaurant. When I was in yeshiva, I used to see people would come, not only during the Sfarim sale, people, random people would just show up in the cafeteria and eat there. Now you have so many restaurants, you know, around, you'd have to question why anybody would come to the cafeteria of all places to eat. Be someone unique, but maybe they're like a real, you know, want to give their son the YU experience to eat in the cafeteria. But there used to be outside people would come, and certainly they're allowed to come in, and or certainly the staff that we have here could eat in the cafeteria, and they don't live here at all. So it's open to the public. So we can't really say it's unique to the students of the Talmidim of yeshivas. Is that really considered unique to you? It sounds like more of a public space. So Shechter argued that to light in the cafeteria seems to be quite problematic. So what are we left with? So we're left with, well, the lobby of the dormitory. So Shechter has argued for many years that the lobby of the dormitory is also not ideal, because the Chazon Ish, as we mentioned at the beginning, argues that a courtyard in the time of the Gemara, they lit at the doorway of the courtyard that opened up and that was adjacent to Rishus HaRabim, because people did semi-private activities in the courtyard. They hung out their laundry and sunbathed, and they walked around in their pajamas. He said, but the Chazon Ish says in our courtyards, they're public spaces, nobody does any private activities. So Shechter argued, since the lobby, we don't have the status of chatzir anymore, of having it be an extension of your home, to light in the lobby also is problematic, kind of leaving us, you know, neither here nor there. However, in my humble opinion, and what I've been told, Rav Shechter also has seemed to modify his approach in recent years, at least with regards to certain spaces in yeshiva. In my opinion, all of the lobbies are considered to be semi-private. People do semi-private activities in the lobby. People are happy to walk around. Hopefully they don't walk around in pajamas the rest of campus, but they walk around in their pajamas in the lobby. People will do semi-private, I take the liberty of doing semi-private activities in the lobby of the dorm, and I think that's what it's there for. Certainly on the second floor must, that's in the dormitory, an outside person can't even get there. So certainly the people do semi-private activities what there, but even in the lobby of morgue, and even in the any of the lobbies.
What about the guards? I mean, what are the guards being there? You can't just walk into one of the lobbies here.
So it's not a private area. It's not a public space. It's true. So I think, but you can't really walk into a lobby of any apartment building, but it's assumed within the tenants of the building that you're not going to, you know, start walking around in your pajamas in the lobby.
You'd be surprised what goes on in Reuben.
In Reuben, here, so in the dorm, what I'm saying is an apartment building, if you'd go to the Upper East Side and start walking around in your pajamas in the lobby, someone would say something to you. Here, I would imagine. Here, it's commonplace. So that's exactly the point. So I think the lobbies of the dormitories are ideal spaces to light. In our yeshiva, and most yeshivas probably, the lobby of the dormitory is considered to be an extension of the residences in the larger building, and therefore would be an extension of our rooms, and you could light Halakha Seminar in the lobby. But Halakha Seminar has to take place in conjunction with the home. That's why also the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Beis Yosef that we have the minhag to light Halakha Seminar in shul with a bracha. The Ramadho is quick to point out that your person is not yotze his Halakha Seminar in shul, because it's not your house. You have to light Halakha Seminar in conjunction with the home. Why then do we light Halakha Seminar in the shul in the first place? So the Beis Yosef quotes two reasons from the Rishonim, both which appear in Shulchan Aruch. One reason is to be mefarsim the neis. The shul is a public space, so if you light Halakha Seminar there, people will notice. The other reason is because the dumi the Beis HaMikdash. Every shul is considered to be a mikdash miyat, a miniature replica of the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore, just like there was a menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, so too we light a menorah in the shul during Hanukkah, and we have it on the right side of the shul, just like it was on the right side of the Heichal in the Beis HaMikdash, and it faces from east to west, just like the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. So both reasons appear in Shulchan Aruch. Number one, to be mefarsim the neis. Number two, because dumya the Beis HaMikdash. So most Paiskim assume that in order to light Halakha Menorah in any space that's not your home, with a bracha, you can light a Halakha Menorah wherever you want without a bracha. But if you want to light it with a bracha, it would have to satisfy both of these requirements, the precedent of lighting in shul. Number one, that it'd be a shul, And number two, that it be in a public space that's mefaris in the nace. What if you only had pier some nace? We want to light at the George Washington Bridge or in Times Square or in some other government building or have a public menorah lighting. So most paiskim would assume, Rav Shlomo Zalman, Minchas Yitzchak, Tzitzis Eliezer, Sternbach, that you have to satisfy both requirements, and if you're lighting in these places which are not either a shul or someone's home, you can't make a bracha. However, Rabbi Avadia disagrees, as well as well known, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, that the Chabad Hasidim, that they light, they feel as long as you're being mefaris in the neis, you have one of the, both are legitimate justifications for lighting a menorah in a place that's not your home. Either that you're being mefaris in the neis on a grand scale, or that it's in a shul. But each one independently is sufficient grounds to light halakhs in menorah. So therefore, in the 1970s, Chabad, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, instructed them to make what later became known as the Menorah Wars, to begin lighting halakhs and menorah in any public space that that they would allow them to do that. And he's made tremendous inroads. There's a menorah lighting everywhere. I mean, it came out everywhere. Every Chabad house certainly has their own, but almost every public square has menorah due to the efforts of Chabad. In fact, it was questioned in the Supreme Court in 1984 and again in 1989. Whether this is a violation of church and state. It was originally brought up by nativity scenes in 1984 in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, and then later in 1989 in Pittsburgh. The Chabad was challenged and went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled, ironically, that the menorah is a secular symbol, universal symbol of, you know, goodwill and universalism, and therefore it's not a violation of church and state. So then we have to ask ourselves, it's a symbol of pluralism. How much are we really accomplishing by lighting the menorah in all of these settings? Others were upset about it, in terms of what should be our attitude and posture in a secular culture. Should we really be seeking to light halakhs and menorah and to introduce religious symbols into the public sphere? And that's a large debate. Is it a better strategy for us to stand behind separation of church and state? Because if we insert our religious symbols, other religions will also be justified in doing so, and that could lead to be worse for us. Or perhaps one could argue, no, secular society is falling down the slippery slope of moral relativism, that if we could at least do something, bring religion back into the public sphere somewhat and bring some moral compass to the society in which we live, we'll save it somewhat from tohu vavohu and moral chaos. So you could make that argument too. I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other, but to make a bracha at one of these lightings, I think is the position of Chassidei Chabad, and of course the Rebbe Avadia Yosef. But most poskim would not make a bracha on such a halakha menorah, again, because it has to be done in conjunction with the home. Shul is a different situation, is Dumya de Beis HaMikdash, but otherwise it really has to be done in conjunction with the home. What about if a person doesn't have a house? He's traveling and it's a place where he doesn't have a house. So the Gemara tells himself the Shabbos, both a person who's lighting halakha menorah and a person who sees a menorah makes a bracha. The person who's lighting makes the bracha of Lahadik Nesha Chanukah. The person who sees a menorah makes the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim. So Rashi asks on the Gemara, how do you have a person who sees menorah who's not lighting? Or hasn't lit? How can you have it? When would you ever say, make a birchas haroya? The Gemara says, person who lights and the person who sees. So Rashi says, first answer in Rashi is, that we're talking about a person who is on his way home from shul, from the base medrash, from class, and he sees someone else's menorah before he gets a chance to light his own. So he makes the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim at that point. That's Rashi's opinion. In the Hagos Maimonides, on the bottom of the Rambam, he quotes from Rabbeinu Simcha, who disagrees. He says, no, if a person's going to light when he gets home, wherever he's going, even if I see your menorah before I get there, I don't make Sha'asa Nisim. I make Sha'asa Nisim when I get home, when I'm going to light myself. Not when I see your menorah on the way home. So Reb Chaim explained that the opinion of Rashi seems to be is that the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim is not a bracha on the mitzvah of lighting the menorah. Rabbeinu Simcha assumed it's a bracha on the mitzvah of lighting the menorah. So just like I make Lahadik Nesha Chanukah when I get home, I'm going to light, I make Sha'asa Nisim when I get home and I'm going to light. However, Rashi seems to assume the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim is a bracha on seeing the menorah. Like you make a bracha when you see lightning or thunder, so too you make a bracha when you see the menorah. And Reb Chaim claimed that the Masechta Seifrim also seems to support the opinion of Rashi, because it says in the Brights of Masechta Seifrim that a person is supposed to make Sha'asa Nisim not before he lights, but after he lights. It's not a Birchas HaMitzah that you make over L'Asiyasan, but rather like a Birchas Sheva Voidah that a person makes after he sees lightning or thunder. So too he makes a bracha of seeing the menorah afterwards. However, the Rama disagrees, and that's our practice. We make sure asa nisim over lasi asim before lighting the menorah. And Reb Chaim said that's following the opinion of Rabbeinu Simcha, that everybody makes asa nisim when they get home, not the first time they see a menorah. And they make it over lasi asim before you light the menorah. You make lahadlik and then asa nisim. Reb Chaim famously was chayshish for both of these opinions, and therefore Reb Chaim would be careful not to see someone else's menorah before he got home and lit his own, because maybe you have to make asa nisim as the first opportunity that you see someone else's menorah. And Reb Chaim was careful that after the first night of Hanukkah, when it's possible, he would light the first candle, make lahadlik nesh Hanukkah over lasi asim, light the first candle of the menorah, then make sha'asa nisim upon seeing the candle, and then light the rest of the candle subsequently. To be yotze both shitas of lahad, that the sha'asa nisim might be a birchas haroya or might be a birchas hamitzvah. However, we can't accept Rashi's pshat. When does a person make sha'asa nisim upon seeing the menorah? Is when he sees someone else's menorah before he gets home. But we pass like Rabbeinu Simcha. Everybody makes it when they oivelasi asan before they're going to light. You make it when you're going to go light, even if you see someone else's menorah first. So what then is the Gemara mean? What is it discussing when the Gemara says that a person makes sha'asa nisim upon seeing the menorah? So Rashi quotes another opinion, which is that it's referring to a person who doesn't have a house. He's on a boat. So he has nowhere to light hadlakas ha-menorah. So therefore they instituted a bracha of sha'asa nisim that when he sees the menorah, even though he can't light, he doesn't have a house in which to light him. But at least if he's going to see someone else's menorah, then he should make the bracha of sha'asa nisim. Yeah.
He can't light, then who's lighting?
Well, the boat example would be a problem unless he's, you know, on a cruise up the coast. But yeah, but let's say you don't have a house, Nebo. So at least if you see someone's menorah, you can make the bracha of sha'asa nisim. Similarly, Taisus and Masechta Sukkah on Daf Mem Vav asks, why is it that we have two brachas for the bracha of halakas ner Chanukah? We have lahadlik and sha'asa nisim. Most mitzvahs only get one bracha. So the Netziv claims it's perhaps because there's two nisim on Chanukah. You have the nes of the Pachas Shemen, the nes of the Milchama. Maybe each bracha corresponds to one of the nisim. However, Tosfos says Masechta Sukkah, it's because we don't want someone who doesn't have a house to be left out. If he doesn't have a, in most mitzvahs, you don't need a house to perform. There's no prerequisite of having a home. Here, you have to have a home in order to light Hadlakas Ner Chanukah. So Tosfos says, therefore, we didn't want them to be left out. We introduced another bracha of sha'asa nisim in order to include them as well. So Rashi and Tosfos both seem to assume in order to light Hadlakas Ner Chanukah, you have to have a home. If you don't have a home, you can't light. What is considered to be a home, though? So the Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank in his Sefer Mikroi Kodesh quotes in the Marsham, if you have a roof over your head, that's a home. So if you're on a train or on a plane where there's shelter, then that's considered to be your home for the night, and you could light halakas ha-menorah there. And Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank disagrees, and it's a philosophical discussion. What constitutes a home is not just a roof over your head, but some measure, modicum of privacy. If you have no privacy, that's not a home. So unless you're in a first class compartment, cabin, on a plane, you don't have privacy. In a train, you don't have any privacy. So then he felt that that's not considered to be a home for the night. What about, though, if a person is in one of these situations? Marsham felt if you're on a train or you're on a plane where you have a roof over your head, really you should light Hadlakas ha-menorah. Chashochan felt that one should do that as well. Even though you don't have any privacy, at least you have a roof over your head. At least you should light Hadlakas ha-menorah, probably without a bracha. Yeah.
Is the door considered private?
Sure.
So you have a roommate, though. Any private from strangers?
Most of life, hopefully, people have roommates.
What's private from who?
It's
strangers? Yeah.
I guess so. I mean, it's, again, it's a philosophical discussion. Yeah. What's considered privacy? I mean, we have privacy in the bathroom, then you have privacy in the bedroom. I mean, there's different levels of privacy. I assume some privacy. That's why I said not something where strangers. I guess so. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't we discuss it very practically in the Masechta Sukkos? We're talking about like what constitutes a home.
Ah, no. That's the structure. That's considered
to
be a structure.
What's
not
different? It says like if someone what was it about like, stuff, girls with zonar or something like that, like you go to her father's house and you're like what if she didn't have a house? Like, you know, like so it says like what the
Most of Masechta Sukkah discusses the dimensions and the quality of the materials in order to be considered a home. We're discussing a different issue, which is you might have all of those qualifications.
So it says like you don't fit these qualifications, and it's not considered like it's not part of this, not part of that.
The pasuk also says, "Kol ha'ezach b'Yisrael yeshu basukos reulim kol Yisrael yeshu basuka achas." Everyone can sit in one sukkah, but I'm not sure the definition of home for menorah is the same as the definition of dira sarai for sukkah. Those two might be very different things. This is a permanent home. This is a temporary home.
Yeah.
So I think the best thing in such a situation is probably to light, Rosh Hashanah recommended to light a flashlight that has a battery without a bracha. It has to have an incandescent bulb, not an LED flashlight. If it has an incandescent bulb, so then a person perhaps could use that for Lux Haminera if you have no other solution. I don't think that that's a solution on throughout all the days of Hanukkah. If you happen to be traveling on a plane one of the nights of Hanukkah, which you should avoid, so then perhaps you could be yoyed to the mitzvah in that way, because the Shulchan Aruch says, perhaps, Shulchan Aruch says that a person could use any type of fuel for the menorah, wax, oil. In fact, Meiri recommended to use wax because it burns better than the oil. You could use either one you want for the mitzvah of Hanukkah menorah. In fact, it says in the Mishnah Masechta Shabbos that even the shmonim, even the oils that you can't use for Hadlakas Neira Shabbos, you can use for Hadlakas HaMenorah. Some say that's because a ner, a candle, is comprised of three parts. There's the shemen, the psila, and the ner. Shemen, psila, and ner is Rosh Tevis Nefesh. And that's because the Chedush HaRim added that even Jews who are not inspired by Shabbos, or even Jews, even who don't come to Shul and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, all Jews who have some affiliation, most Jews, even who have a minimal affiliation, keep Hanukkah. Because even the Jews who aren't inspired by Shabbos, kol hashmonim, all the oils can be used on Hanukkah, because all Jews, if there's some spark left, there's some pinta l'yid, he's celebrating Hanukkah. And the Ribbono Shel Olam accepts their Hadlakas HaMenorah. In fact, the Pasuk says in Sefer Hosea, Shuva Yisrael ad Hashem Elokecha ki chashavta b'aveinecha. We should do tshuva to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ad is begematria 74. So the Sfarim say, because there's 74 days from Yom Kippur until 74 days from Hashanah Rabbah until Hanukkah, from Yom Kippur till Hanukkah. Because a person could still do tshuva, not for the Jews who didn't come on, who didn't come to shul on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they don't come to Shul on Shabbos, at least if they come to Shul on Hanukkah, so then they keep Hanukkah in their home, the Ribbono Shel Olam accepts their tshuva. In fact, Rav Moshe Wolfson writes in the Sefer Emunas Itecha something phenomenal. He says, we have three kriyas, three parshas we read during the period of the Yamim Noiroim. We have parshas Ve'elech, which has 30 psukim, parshas Nitzavim is 40 psukim, parshas Hazino has 52 psukim. So he says that corresponds to the three periods of tshuva we have during the Yamim Noiroim. We have 30 days from Rosh Chodesh Elul until Rosh Hashanah, that corresponds to the 30 psukim in Parshas Vayelech. We have 40 days from Rosh Chodesh Elul to Yom Kippur, that corresponds to the 40 days from Rosh Chodesh Elul to Yom Kippur. And then corresponds to the 40 days, 40 psukim in Parshas Nitzavim. And then we have 52 days from Rosh Chodesh Elul until Hashanah Rabbah, corresponds to the 52 psukim in Parshas Hazino. But if you add them all up together, all three of these numbers, it's 122. So he says, because there's 122 days from Rosh Chodesh Elul until Zois Chanukah, to the last day of Chanukah, because some people, the Jews who don't come to Shul on Shabbos, the Jews who don't come to Shul Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, if there's some pinta l'yid, there's some spark there, they're keeping Chanukah. And the Ribbono Shel Olam keeps the doorways of tshuva, the gates of tshuva open, even for them, all the way until Chanukah, to come to their house to accept their tshuva as well. So all of the oils a person can use on Chanukah. Nonetheless, the Ramah writes, it's a mitzvah min ha-mufchar to use oil, zeicha l'neis, because the neis took place in the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash with oil. It's a mitzvah min ha-mufchar to use oil. The Shaar HaTzion actually quotes with Maharal, you can't be yoytze if you use wax. We assume it doesn't have to be wax, it could be oil. Any ner candle satisfies the requirement of lighting halakas ha-menorah. But it has to be somewhat similar to the Beis HaMikdash. We just assume all candles are somewhat similar fundamentally, conceptually, to the Nair and the Beis HaMikdash, yeah? Shlomo
Zalman said that you could light with two brachas on a plane with a flashlight.
No bracha. No bracha.
So
bracha.
What's the...
You do the best you can. It's something. Maybe. So in Hilchos Shabbos, by Nair Shabbos, most poskim assume that a glowing filament, hot metal, person creates hot metal which glows on Shabbos, he's over the malacha of mavi, of kindling the flame. So most assume that a glowing piece of metal, incandescent bulb, which are harder and harder to come by in society, but that would be considered to be a flame. You could be yotzei halakas neir Shabbos with that. However, most poskim, if not everyone, find some sort of problem with using such a bulb on Hanukkah. Why? It's a ner on Shabbos. So perhaps it's because most poskim assume in one way or another it's not dumya the Beis HaMikdash. Either because it's not oil, the fuel is not there, it's coming through the wires. It's not like something with the menorah where the fuel was contained beforehand. So in some way or another, it's not dumya the Beis HaMikdash. So most poskim, if not all of them, do not accept using electric menorah lichatchila for the mitzvah of halaksa menorah on Hanukkah. But Rav Shlomo Zalman says it's a item. You could kvetch it in perhaps some way or another and dodge all of the different arguments. So if a person has no other possibility, perhaps to use a flashlight, which has a battery, and the fuel is there, so maybe you could use it to be in that fashion. Yeah.
The person's flying on the night of Hanukkah. He relied on Sternbach to light in the home that you slept in the previous nights.
For sure. That's where you were traveling. That was your home for those few days. So you should light there, yeah. Ideally, it'd be better to light in your own home.
From pod, you could light.
Ah, whole different shiur. How early can you light? Yeah. Well, if a person has such a situation, wait, he's leaving on a plane before 4 o'clock.
That's what I'm saying. If you have to go to the airport, it'd be the last time you'll be
there. Yeah, it's a whole separate discussion. You're asking a good point. So halakhas menorah is inextricably linked with the home. That's the ideal place a person should light. Somewhat of a question, what is considered to be a home? That's why the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos, the fundamental mitzvah of halakhas ner Chanukah is ner ishu beisa, one candle for all of the members of the home. Mahadrin, of course, we know to light one candle corresponding to the night of Chanukah, and then mahadrin, minim mahadrin, one candle, candles corresponding to the night of Chanukah for each one of the members of the household. But fundamentally, a person can be yoytzeh the mitzvah with one candle for all of the bnei avayis. So the Pnei Yeshua asks, how could a person be Yotze with one candle for all of the Bnei Abayis? One menorah. You can't be Yotze with one lulav for all of the Bnei Abayis, the ceremonial shaking of the lulav. You can't be Yotze with one person sitting in the sukkah for all of the Bnei Abayis. How could we be Yotze with one halaksa menorah for all the Bnei Abayis? So Pnei Yeshua explains, again, that is because halaksa menorah is similar to mezuzah, that it's a chayvas haba, a mitzvah that has to be done in conjunction with the home. And therefore, just like we have one mezuzah for all of the Bnei Abayis, not everybody has to have their own mezuzah on the doorway, so too we have one halaksa menorah for all of the Bnei Abayis. In fact, that's why the Gemara says in Masechta the Shabbos, or Sheshes, tells us two chidushim. One is that if a person's wife is lighting a halaksa menorah in the house, even if he's not home, he could be yotze with her hadlaka. Because she's lighting in the home, so he could be yotze with her hadlaka. There's actually, though, even if he's in a different time zone, I don't think he could be and Dayan Weiss writes in the Minchas Yitzchak, he can't be Yotze with her. If he's in the West Coast, and she's in if he's in Eretz Yisrael, and she's here, even in the West Coast, the East Coast, so the lighting times are different, then he can't be Yotze with someone in a different time zone. But if she's in, you're sleeping in a hotel in New York, because a deposition in the morning, and she's sleeping at home, and she's in light Hadlaka Menorah in the home, he could be Yotze with her Hadlaka. However, the Shulchan Aruch has two opinions. Should he at least light his own menorah to see the menorah? Because we mentioned that perhaps making the bracha of Sha'as HaNisim is not a bracha that you make when you light the menorah, which he could be yotze with his wife. It's a bracha that you make upon seeing the menorah. So one opinion Shulchan Aruch is, if you're not going to see your own menorah, how could you have it? You're not going to see your own menorah. You're going to be yotze with your wife at home. You should at least light a menorah or see someone else's menorah and make the bracha of Sha'as HaNisim. But then Rav Sheshes tells us another chiddush, and that is that an achsenoy is chayv b'ner Chanukah. A guest is chayv in Ner Chanukah. So the Ran asks, what's the chiddush? A guest is obligated to keep kosher. He's obligated to keep Shabbos. Why would he not be obligated to keep Ner Chanukah? So the Gemara explains, because I might have thought it's like mezuzah. If I go to your home, I don't have to put up a mezuzah on the door. You have to put up the mezuzah on the door. So the Ran says, I might have thought Halakas Ner Chanukah is exactly like mezuzah. And I'm potter if I go to your house, and the Efor of Sheshes comes to teach us a chiddush. No, when you go to someone else's house, that's considered to be your house for the night, and you can light halakas menorah there. But you're chayev, even though you're going as a guest to someone else's house. But that was the chiddush, is because halakas menorah is a chodesh habayis, an obligation upon the home. And therefore, you might have thought you're potter, and therefore Sheshes comes to tell us that you're chayev. So you can light halaksa menorah, and if you're away from someone else's house for Shabbos, sleeping over there during the week, you should light halaksa menorah there. Rav Shechel is actually of the opinion that you can, based on Salvechik, that you can't light halaksa menorah if you're a guest in someone else's home. The best you can do, because it's not your house, the best you can do is be mishtatev b'pruta. You can buy a chelek of his oil, because it's not your home. It's almost similar, exactly like mezuzah. It's not your house, and therefore you can't light halaksa menorah. I can just be mishtatev with you in your oil. So halakas ha-menorah seems to be a mitzvah that's inextricably linked with the home, just like mezuzah. In fact, the pasuk tells us in Sefer Mishlei, v'chol beisa lavu shonim, that the Neshes Chayo, that every house was covered, lavush shonim, was concealed, was dressed not in Shanim, but in Shnayim, in two mitzvahs. We have, as the Gemara tells us in Masechta Shabbos, you have the Ner Chanukah, Mismo, and the Mezuzah Miyamin, that each one of these two mitzvahs comes to protect the home. Why do we need two mitzvahs to protect the home? We have Mezuzah on the right, we have the Ner Chanukah on the left. So perhaps it's because the Pasuk tells us in this week's Parsha, Hatzileni no miyad ochi miyad Esav, the Yaakov Avinu, and he's preparing for his encounter with Esav, Tzidavis to the Ribbono Shel Olam, to be saved from the hands of my brother, from the hands of Esav. And the Beis Halevi explains that it's because sometimes the Umas HaOlam approach us as Esav, with open hostility and anti-Semitism in an attempt to destroy us and annihilate us. However, sometimes the Umas HaOlam approach us miyad ochi, with disguise as a brother, with encouraging us to assimilate, to adopt their values and their culture. And therefore, Yaakov Avinu davened to the Ribbono Shel Olam to be protected from these two dangers that we encounter living in secular society, both the Miyad Esav as well as Miyad Ochi. And perhaps that's why the Pasuk tells us, and Parashas told us, that Yitzchak describes Esav as possessing two hands, Hakol Kol Yaakov, and Hayodayim Yidei Esav. What are the two hands of Esav? So the Sfasemis explains that it's like the Gemara tells us in Masechta Soita, that whenever one is giving Teichacha, rebuke to others, it should always be small Doicha, with your left hand you push them away, but Yimin Mikarevis. At the same time, you have to be Mechazik them, to pull them close with the right hand. So too, says the Sfasemis, Esav possesses two hands. He possesses, sometimes approaches us with the small Doicha. He approaches us with hostility, pushing us away, open anti-Semitism, trying to destroy us. But sometimes he approaches us with the Yamin Mikareves, with pulling us close into the brotherly embrace of assimilation and attempting to encourage us to adopt their culture and their values. And continues the Sfasemes, that's why Yaakov Avinu has two koilas, has two voices. Hakol Kol Yaakov, the Medrash tells us, one koil of Tefillah, one koil of Talmud Torah. Because to counteract, to defend ourselves from the threat of Miyad Esav, we need the Kol of Tefillah, to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should protect us. However, to defend ourselves from the threat of the Yamin Mikareves, of the Miyad Ochi, when he comes disguised as a brother, encouraging us to assimilate, we need the Kol of Talmud Torah, to use Torah to discern what is a mitzvah, what is an avera, what is part of our culture, what is part of our value system, and what is not. On the Yontif of Purim, of course, we faced the existential threat of annihilation. On the Yontif of Chanukah, we faced the threat of annihilation, but the existential threat of assimilation. That the Greeks attempted to encourage us to adopt their culture and their values and abandon our own. And perhaps that's why we have these two protections on our home. Because sometimes the Umas HaOlam come to our door as Miyad Esav, with a small doicha, attempting to annihilate us and destroy us with open anti-Semitism and hostility. We know that all too well. So when they come with a small doicha, we have, their left is our right, we have on our right the mezuzah, our tefillahs, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we trust in him completely that he will protect us. However, sometimes the Umas HaOlam approach us, they come to our door of our home, not with open hostility, but rather as Miyad Ochi disguises our brother, with the Yamin Mikareves pulling us close to the brotherly embrace of assimilation, attempting to encourage us to adopt their culture and their values. And therefore, on their right, which is our left, we have the Ner of the Chanukah. We have the Chanukah Menorah, which reminds us that just like the Chash Menorah resisted the temptation to assimilate into the Greek culture, so too in our times as well, we have to resist the temptation to assimilate into the general culture, to remember, to remind ourselves through the light of Torah, and the light of the Menorah, that what is a mitzvah, what is an avera, what is part of our value system, what is not part of our value system. And in our times, just like in the times of the Chash Menorah, we continue to echo the tefillah of Yaakov Avinu, of Hatzileni no miyad ochi miyad Esav.